Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie. This is The Reason Podcast. Please subscribe to us at iTunes. Rate and review us there as well. And check us out on SoundCloud. And of course, go to reason.com for all kinds of free minds and free markets oriented political coverage, cultural coverage, and news coverage. Today, a day after Donald Trump, a Law and Order candidate, has been elected president, I'm very happy to be talking with Ken White. He is a lawyer in Los Angeles and a writer at Popat blog at popat.com. Ken, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks for having me, Nick.
All right. So, well, let's get right to it. Donald Trump, for the first time, and those of us of a certain age will remember Richard Nixon and various other hangers-on in the early 70s, still talking about law and order. Donald Trump was calling that out. He was hearkening back to it. Is it a good idea to elect somebody who puts forth law and order as major principles? Is it a good idea to elect him as president?
Well, you know, I don't really know if we have an alternative, Nick. I think pretty much every candidate has been on the record law and order, and that's
right.
Been the rhetoric of everybody since Nixon. I don't think that there has been a candidate who has been explicitly questioning police power, expressly questioning whether the courts are showing enough fidelity to constitutional rights for criminal defendants in living memory. And I don't know if such a person is electable in today's America, which is kind of depressing. That said, there are some gradations, and I'm sure that some candidates, maybe Mr. Trump will be one, could be more vigorous in how they run the federal criminal justice system.
Now, we're in an era where, you know, criminal justice reform may actually get done in the rump end of Congress here, in the lame duck session of Congress. People like Rand Paul on the libertarian side, people like Cory Booker, a libertarian Republican, people like Cory Booker, a liberal Democrat, have been pushing this through the Senate. It seems like we're de-escalating for the first time in, God knows, 20, 30 years or more, the federal criminal justice system. Do you think that is over now with the election of Donald Trump?
Well, I don't want to rain on the parade of those worthies, but I think that the reform that they're discussing is relatively minor and has a relatively small impact on the federal criminal justice system as a whole. It would be nice, as I think they're suggesting, to eliminate some mandatory minimum sentences or to ease some of them, but that's not everything. And no, I don't expect there to be a whole lot of sentiment for more so-called criminal justice reform during the Trump administration, although I have to admit, I don't feel that I have, and I doubt that anyone has, a firm hand on what Trump will actually do as opposed to what he said. But I do have ideas about what he could do, given the power over the United States Department of Justice.
Let's talk about that in a second, and remind people, you were actually a federal prosecutor at a period of your life you don't like to talk about so much anymore.
Well, I was an assistant U.S. attorney from 1995 through 2000, and I've been a defense attorney since then. So I was a federal prosecutor here in Los Angeles, and that involved occasionally going back to the Department of Justice for try to persuade them of things or be instructed.
And in that time, you obviously you write a lot. You reference your experience a lot at the Popat blog, which is widely understood and rightly understood as one of the best legal blogs out there, as well as you guys range widely and hilariously over a lot of different topics. But you reference it there. You wrote a great piece for us, kind of Confessions of a Douchebag Prosecuting Attorney, for Reason earlier this year. If people look up Ken White at Reason.com.
I don't think that was my exact wording, but...
No, you know, that was how we talked about it in the production process in galleys when we were pouring hot type here on the internet. Talk a little bit about that. So what happens, what are the implications when, you know, and assuming the worst or a negative scenario where Trump is serious about law and order. It's not just for him kind of vague words he heard growing up in, you know, during New York City's nadir in terms of kind of out of control crime and violence on the streets. What can a president do? The president is going to be picking the guy who runs the Department of Justice or woman. What can they do, and how bad can it get if you have a law and order person running the Department of Justice again?
Well, it can get bad, and it can get bad on a number of levels. First of all, there's setting the priority for federal prosecutions across the country. There are a lot of U.S. attorneys out there, and they have very limited resources. Unlike the various DA offices, which basically have to take all comers, if you shoot someone, they don't get to decide, we're not going to use our resources on this year. The U.S. attorneys' offices are very choosy about what federal prosecutions they do in different districts, and different administrations have had different priorities. So you've seen administrations that have been concerned, for instance, about civil rights prosecutions, about federal prosecutions of officers that violate suspects' rights, and of vigorous white-collar prosecutions of misconduct in the financial sector. Those are the ones that all us ex-AUSA A's love, because those are the people with money, of course.
Right.
But you've also had times when the Department of Justice really revs up the incentives for higher numbers and smaller cases. So you could have a much bigger emphasis on immigration cases, on prosecuting people who are smugglers, prosecuting people who came here after being deported, prosecuting people who are involved in manufacturing false identity documents. Mm-hmm. And you can certainly think that that's good to do that. The thing is that federal prosecutions of that sort of thing are a drop in the ocean. Unless we spend massive amounts of money, they're never going to have much more of a dent on immigration crime than they currently have on drug crime. And the other problem is every time you shift priorities, you take away money from types of prosecutions you might want to see more of. So when you hear complaining that, no one in the financial industry was prosecuted after the 2008 crash, well, they're not likely to be if you have U.S. attorneys' offices where the white-collar crime is minimally staffed. But then you also have direct ideological-type things. It's certainly possible to use the Department of Justice to go after an enemies list. We have in Mr. Trump someone who suggested that he'd put his opponent in jail, and he's certainly capable of
Do you, as a lawyer, do you take that seriously, or is that just kind of a barstool bully letting off steam?
Yeah, I don't know. And I don't think we'll know till it happens. I think it's possible it's just steam. I think it's possible that he'll do something. But, I mean, the Obama administration showed us with the IRS misbehavior that it's perfectly possible to manipulate the parts of the government to harass or selectively prosecute different people based on ideology. It's also possible to have what I would characterize as sort of bizarre priorities, like, Ashcroft as Attorney General famously tried to ramp up all the obscenity prosecutions.
Right.
And, during the Bush administration, there was a fair amount of emphasis on, finding the most outrageous porn you could, trying
right.
to get someone in a very conservative community to buy it and then federally prosecuting that person.
And then losing the case. I mean, I guess they won one high profile case and then they lost another that they bizarrely took against John Stagliano, a porn producer who has been a donor to Reason Foundation, but then they tried it in Washington, D.C. And when it came to the jury, the judge wouldn't even let the jury Stagliano's people present a defense because he was like, you haven't even made a case here. But that's what you get, right? Like that's the president can be, they appoint an attorney general and the attorney general, can start saying, we need more prosecution of kittens, Mexican mm-hmm. kittens and chihuahuas. They're coming across the border and that's going to have a major effect. I assume then that you are cautiously pessimistic, given that Trump in the rhetoric, he talked a lot about crime in the streets, which is mostly in his head. Crime is at or near historic lows in most major metropolitan areas and throughout the country, but then also talking a lot about immigration. That seems like something that he might be investing a lot of energy and power into.
Well, he has relatively little influence on crime in the streets, in the sense of that's overwhelmingly policed by state and local forces, which most likely he knows he doesn't control. And, you know, he could certainly have a policy agenda on that, trying to get Congress to give more tax money to the police departments. You know, he can throw around the bully pulpit. He can even try to do things like use the mechanism of the Justice Department to go after groups like Black Lives Matter on the theory that they're somehow part of a national conspiracy against police, which I think would be very abusive, whether or not you agree with everything Black Lives Matter does. So the mechanisms are there, but I think that the generally the system trends more towards dysfunction and incompetence than it does towards effective manipulation. And my hope is more of a law and order regime where he talks big and has big dreams, but can't really accomplish much of anything. And I'm hoping that's a more realistic outcome than a genuinely Nixonian, let's use the mechanisms to go after people, or, you know, like the IRS recently against against conservative groups.
Now, do you think, you know, with one of the interesting stories about this campaign really is the role that WikiLeaks might have played in convincing people or hardening people's convictions that Hillary Clinton is, if not quite doing illegal things, is kind of a shady character and a liar who will say one thing to a private audience and something else to a public one. What happens, like, are we in a world now where if the government, starts to go after conservative or, you know, I guess maybe in this case it would be, liberal or progressive groups, kind of in a Nixonian fashion, and Trump has certainly, you know, kind of flashed, flashed his leg on that a little bit. Will it be easier or harder to find out? Because we do, one of the things that this election may have hinged on is a kind of involuntary transparency that freaks people out for all sorts of reasons. I think it freaks out individuals, it freaks out corporations, it freaks out whole governments. Do you feel like we'll be better prepared to look for that kind of pattern of prosecution or the goods, like the secret emails that prove something?
I don't think we'll. I think we'll be in a worse place, and this is why I think we're much more used to the government and the mechanisms of law enforcement using leaks than being held back by them. So, you know, one of my pet peeves with journalism is the tendency to accept leaks from law enforcement to talk about defendants or suspects and not report on the story that is the fact that law enforcement is leaking this to hurt the defendant and help the case, which to me is part of the story.
Right.
I think that we'll continue to see leakers and the press they leak it to be willing to accept leaks uncritically, and that's generally going to work to the favor of law enforcement because there's this mentality that, you know, it's what's in the leak that's news, and the fact of the leak or how it happened or why it happened isn't news. So let me give you a little example of that, Nick, that to me always sums up my feeling about the relationship between law enforcement and the press. My partner represented a controversial local politician, always in the news, and the DA's office charged him and showed up to arrest him in his house early one Friday morning. And, of course, they tipped off the Los Angeles Times. The Times sent a reporter and a photographer, but they got there a little late. The local politician was already in cuffs in the car. The reporter complained about it.
Well, you know, traffic is hell in LA. I mean, so.
Yeah, you guys are early riders, yeah. Sure. So they walked the guy back into his house and then turned him around and walked him back in cuffs into the car so that they could get photographs of it. And the Times ran it.
Without mentioning that they had reenacted the scene?
Correct.
Holy
because
cow.
To the press, the money shot of the perp walk was news, and the willingness of the cops to stage it for them was not news.
Jeez.
I think we need both a public and a media that is willing to question that read of things. Because sometimes in Wen-Ho Lee, in any number of other cases...
Right, and just to remind people, Wen-Ho Lee worked at Los Alamos, I believe, was it? He was of Chinese-American or Chinese descent, and he was fingered during... Was it the Bush years or the late... It was the late Clinton years, right?
I believe it was the late Clinton years.
Yeah, and with basically trafficking, giving away secrets to the Chinese government, and it looked, you know, he was, you know, putting the slammer and all of that, or was going to be, and it turned out to be a completely evidence-free case against him that seemed rooted in kind of racial or ethnic paranoia.
Yeah, and basically the government used judicious leaks to the media to whip up public opinion against him and ruin his chance of ever getting a fair trial if it had gotten that far. Or, you know, Richard Jewell, described as the Unabubba and through leaks as the guy who committed the Atlanta Olympic bombing when, of course, he had nothing to do with it. And it goes on and on. All the time, I think the media is willing to be used as a tool and is too wedded to the idea that, well, if it's a fact they're giving me, it's a fact they're giving me, and the public has to know, when there's no ethical or practical or political weight to the fact that they're leaking it to me. And I question that premise.
Yeah.
And I guess to come back to your original question, I'm very skeptical that right now we will see leaks that will help defend against a out-of-control Justice Department as opposed to assist it.
Even though the press, I mean, I guess in two ways, you know, the press itself, and you could see this on the every cable network with the exception of Fox last night. I mean, people almost weeping. I thought Brian Williams was, you know, going to pull a Bud Dwyer at some point on MSNBC. You know, they were very mad, you know, and very upset by the rise of Trump. They dislike Trump, but they will not, that will not, or maybe it's just the talking heads, but that won't filter into an operational shift where the press actually becomes more of a watchdog organization rather than a kind of lapdog enabler of government overreach.
Right. And I don't see anything from WikiLeaks that indicates to me that they're likely to be even-handed either.
And do you think, I mean, this is an interesting question, that Trump on a certain level and his supporters, they rose to prominence and ultimately to electoral victory by saying, you know what, we're calling bullshit on the media, the mainstream media, the lamestream media, with the exception of the great good journalists at Breitbart, are all full of beans and we don't believe a word you say. That is not going to transfer into a broad-based skepticism of what President Trump starts enacting, I assume.
I don't think people's minds are going to work that way. I think that he has very successfully trained his followers to, you know, think that if it's anti-Trump, if it's not supportive of Trump, then it's not credible. And that's going to be very useful to him as a president. And I hope it doesn't last too long, because I think it's very dangerous to be that uncritical. I think Obama has enjoyed that type of protection for some time. I think the Clintons did too, to some extent. And, you know, if you get a sufficiently aggressive president with that type of following that completely disregards the media, well, it's a matter for concern.
Talk a little bit about, you know, people are already throwing around the idea of Rudy Giuliani, former mayor of New York, former federal prosecutor, who in many ways kind of, you know, perfected the perp walk on white-collar crime in New York back in the day, as attorney general, or Chris Christie, who it would be interesting, the governor of New Jersey, who is under all sorts of attack for his involvement in various skeevy business, most prominently Bridgegate, where some of his people have been found guilty of shutting down a bridge in order to screw over a political opponent of Christie's. You know, if we get he also was a prosecutor, if I'm not mistaken, but, you know, if we get a Rudy Giuliani attorney general, is that a real problem?
Well, I think the priorities and the agenda are more of a problem than the personality. Someone like Rudy Giuliani strikes me as someone like Trump, who's likely to do a lot of you know, big showy flourishes, and that will be unpleasant. But that the thing we should really keep our eye on is what are their prosecution priorities? What cases do they bring? Where do they shift the Department of Justice's resources? I mean, Giuliani, yeah, he's the king of the perp walk. He strikes me as the type of AG who could do something like, you know, it's typical when you're negotiating with the government for a client who hasn't been charged yet to arrange for a surrender. And, you know, I could see Giuliani doing something like, you know, no surrenders, everyone gets arrested, and everyone gets the perp walk. That would be the sort of classic showy, look how tough we are asshole thing to do that people like that enjoy. In terms of the substance, I mean, I'm more afraid of a quiet, efficient, capable, self-controlled attorney general completely devoted to a bad agenda than I am to, you know, kind of a nudge like Rudy Giuliani.
Why don't we close with, and I realize I'm going off script here a little bit, but Janet Reno, who was either the longest or second longest serving attorney general in American history, recently died. She served under the Bill Clinton in the 90s. And was pretty terrible on a whole host of issues. I suspect that you agree with that. When you look at recent attorneys general, are there any people, and let's define recent by, going back to the bicentennial year or something, are there any attorneys general who you think actually perform the function in the way that it is constitutionally intended, where, you know, they actually help the federal government run more efficiently and they're not just kind of settling scores or following their own obsessions into, weird and disturbing places?
I don't know if I would hold up any and say, gosh, I wish this were the attorney general again. I think a number of them have shown flashes of independence. I mean, certainly, Reno, I guess I have a soft spot for Reno because I met her and she gave me an award. But
you were attacking journalists for going soft on a government that gives them access. But
exactly. So, but she certainly had a very troubling history, both at the beginning and the end of her term. She did do some things that were not on Clinton's agenda. She did permit some investigations that the Clintons mm-hmm. didn't want, which is the type of independence I'd like to see in an attorney general. I would like to.
And there was even that moment of somebody like John Ashcroft, as awful as he was in so many ways, he was on his deathbed or recovering from surgery, and he refused to sign papers that were kind of pushed in his face, right, that would have allowed for all sorts of kind of carte blanche on Bush administration hijinks.
Well, exactly. And that's why I think that I guess that would be the scariest part of a Rudy Giuliani type figure, because I would see Giuliani as likely just Trump's creature. I wouldn't really see him standing up to Trump or exercising independent judgment or, contradicting him, and that would be disappointing. I prefer that he, I don't think it's going to happen, but I'd prefer that Trump find somebody, the sort of people who might question his opinion.
Is there a, do you have a historical attorney general that you love dearly?
Gosh, I'm sure if you gave me time, I'd come up with one, but I don't have one for you.
You know what? You're sounding a lot like Gary Johnson. About world leaders, where I thought you would have 5, 6, 7 people, at the top of your hands. And I'm trying to, like, Nicholas Katzenbach, right? And now I'm just throwing out names. And he was terrible, right? I think he was LBJ's bag man for a while.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are all sorts of terrible ones. Yeah. I mean, I guess you could say that anyone who refused to do something illegal is worth considering.
Right.
Richardson and Ruckelshaus both had their problems, but they resigned during the Saturday Night Massacre right. rather than take Nixon's order to fire the special prosecutor. Yeah. So that at least was a moment of integrity.
Well, and that's what we will look for. That's the best, flashes of integrity in the midnight that is descending on America right now, right? Like shooting stars, we'll look for integrity from attorneys generals under President Trump, which is pretty amazing. On a scale of 1 to 10, what how do you even rate the reality of a President Trump? That is like pretty much, I don't think many of us saw it coming.
I don't think many did, and I think that's a sort of a systemic failure among all of us, which is worth looking into.
Yes. Well, there should be, I guess you change the world, you start with the man in the mirror, right? So there should be a lot of self-analysis and self-immolation over the next couple of months.
Yeah, hopefully we have the capacity to do that.
Yeah. Well, I know that I am glad that Ken White at Popat Blog will be writing about it as long as you can until they come to take you away. And in that case, I never knew you, and but I know that I didn't care for you very much, and I disagreed with you on everything that matters.
I will flip on you in a second. It will get me out, Nick. I just want you to know that.
Well, sadly, maybe we'll be finding that out. But I do want to thank you, Ken White, lawyer in L.A., former prosecutor, now a criminal defense attorney. Thank you so much for talking.
Oh, thanks for the opportunity, Nick. Always a pleasure.
This is Nick Gillespie, and this is The Reason Podcast. Subscribe to us at iTunes and rate and review us as well. Check us out at SoundCloud and go to Reason.com for all of our recordings, all of our videos, and all of our news, politics, and culture coverage.